American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Thursday, September 15th, 2005. And this would be your multi-locational episode of Newsreel, the WAG Global Sidrep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends to help your headspace and timing. That means that it's enabling you, and incidentally, you know where that phrase headspace and timing comes from? Anyone out there? I'd like to get some email. If anybody knows, and this is people who, and as the hint, people who are in the service with me are not eligible for this contest. So if you happen to know what the term headspace and timing refers to, get back to me at newsreel@ranradio.com. RANradio.com. Cam is the Canadian way of saying com, eh? Rant Media is taking stands for free speech today, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. You can, you know, hand it out to people you don't know, or you can do some of the cool stuff that this guy did here in the feedback. Very, very slick. Dear Rant Radio, once again, addressed to everyone in Rant Radio, not just me. Just to let you guys know, I've been a listener to most of all the shows, which is kind of crazy that this little closet bedroom radio station that my buddy Sim started up is actually turned into this massive, you know, thing with so many shows that most people can't even, you know, watch them all. Watch patrolling many times, and I think it's fantastic. It's fantastic because of all the work Sim did on it. Newsreel helped me decide that I want to contribute to my own scene and do something instead of just sitting there on my arse and doing nothing. Now I put out a show every day with a group of dedicated people. The reason I'm emailing you is to let you know that I'm restreaming your shows, Newsreel, on my station. We do a live, live show every night, as well as restream relevant content. So they're doing a live show every evening. If they can keep it up, I say power to them, and just for trying, I say balls up for trying. I know you're okay with this. As Sean says, it's okay every time. And of course it's okay. I just wanted to let you guys know that this is happening. I don't expect a link or recognition. Just wanted to notify you. If you're interested in taking a look at the work we do on our website, it can be found at hackervoice.co.uk. And incidentally, anything in the UK that has a hacker voice, well, you know, they need all the help they can get over there. So maybe you should go over there and check it out. Keep up the good words, peace and goodwill. Belial. So, very, very cool. And I don't know what radio station you're restreaming on in the UK. I don't know if you're on one of the ones that I've already mentioned. If not, make sure we get that through to Sim so we know which stations there are, which no doubt Sim will be going to check out hackervoice.co.uk. And win, lose, or draw, even if you're just a couple guys in a bedroom, hey, that's where we started out too. Of course, it wasn't anything dirty or weird. On to the news. Very, very cool. I got some uncool and cool news. First, we got some freaker news. Remember that kid who hacked Paris Hilton's cell phone? Even though, you know, she's the one who inadvertently got me to say hot, but it wasn't really her. It was my friend Shannon who started saying hot. I didn't know she got it for Paris. Wasn't my fault, man. It wasn't my fault. But apparently, a Massachusetts teenager has pleaded guilty to hacking in the cell phone accounts of the hotel heiress and Hollywood celebrity Paris Hilton. And incidentally, why is she a Hollywood celebrity exactly? I mean, what the fuck does Paris Hilton have that makes her so incredibly cool? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just sort of looking at this going, whoa, dude. Like, you know, she's really dumb. She's kind of a bitch. Of course, you know, I can't say that. I can't say that. I don't know the woman. I don't know the woman. You know, I never met her. I've only seen what I see on TV. And what you get on TV is never really, you know, the true, you know, portrayal. She could be a very nice person. She likes little dogs. You know, I like little dogs. You know, she likes dogs. Can't be totally heartless, you know? The 17-year-old was sentenced to 11 months detention at a juvenile facility for a string of crimes, that including the online posting of revealing photos and celebrity contact numbers from Hilton's phone. As an adult, he will undergo 2 years of supervised release, in which he will be, you ready for this one, barred from possessing or using any computer, cell phone, or other electronic equipment capable of accessing the internet. So that basically means everything with current running through it, and he's fucked. There's fridges that can access the internet now. The U.S. Attorney's Office from Massachusetts and the State District Court declined to identify the teenager, noting that federal juvenile proceedings and the identity of juvenile defendants are under seal. But a law enforcement official close to the case confirmed that the crimes admitted to by the teenager included the hacking of Hilton's account. So this teenager is, you know, nailed for it. So he's somewhere in Massachusetts. The teenager also pleaded guilty to making bomb threats at two high schools and breaking into a telephone company's computer system to set up free cell phone accounts for friends. He also participated in a group attack on data collection firm LexisNexis Group that exposed personal records of more than 300,000 consumers. Prosecutors said victims of the teen's actions have suffered $1 million in damage. $1 million. Wow, what are the odds that the kid just wound up with $1 million? Nice round number. $1 million. That's what he did. 17-year-old kid did $1 million in damage. Good work. Investigators began focusing on the teenager in March 2004 when he sent an explicitive laced email to Florida High School threatening to blow it up, according to a statement from prosecutors. So he got a little angry there. Of course, he didn't do anything. He just said stuff. The school was closed for 2 days while a bomb squad, canine team, fire department, and other emergency officials examined the building and had dogs sniffing prints and taking photos of prints and everything. The teenager told the WashingtonPost.com in an interview for a story this year that he also broke into the Dulles-based America Online Incorporated AOL. The Dulles-based America Online Incorporated. So he broke into AOL. AOL did not return calls seeking comment. WashingtonPost.com did not reveal the teenager's name because he communicated with a reporter on the condition he would not be identified. It is the Washington Post policy to not name juvenile offenders. So this kid's fucked for the next 2 years, but generally he got out of it pretty good. I mean, when you look at it, so he got his wrist slapped and he's not allowed to touch anything with internet access for 2 years, but that's what happened to the Paris Hilton kid. All right. Now, in stupid lawsuit news, this kind of shit makes me nuts. This was sent to me by the Caps Locker. Boston police will almost certainly face a brutality lawsuit seeking millions of dollars in damages in the fatal shooting of 21-year-old Victoria Snellgrove with a pepper pellet, said several lawyers who have both sued and defended the city in civil rights cases. So I guess this, I don't know anything about this, but Snellgrove, this 21-year-old girl, I guess Victoria, girl's name, was smoked with a pepper pellet, which is like a paintball only filled with capsium. Lawyers also predicted yesterday there would be similar legal claims from two men who say they were hit in the face with pellets as police tried to control crowds celebrating the Red Sox victory. Last week, clinching the American League pennant. All lawsuits would target officers who fired the weapons and the city itself for police practices or training. Now, I've got, you know, real issues with this. Several legal specialists expect that product liability suits will be filed against the manufacturer of the compressed air guns that fires pellets, FN Herstal, which markets the weapons as less lethal, which clearly they are. The relatives of Snellgrove, an Emerson College student, clearly have a lawsuit, a multi-million-dollar lawsuit, said Howard Friedman, a Boston lawyer. The question is, who can they sue? That's all the lawyers give a fuck about. Friedman sued the city in 1986 after a high-ranking officer, Robert E. O'Toole Jr., was in charge of crowd control efforts early Thursday. He was caught on videotape by a television news crew slapping a fan. That was the last time the Sox were in the World Series. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. Is all these lawsuits over, you know, a slap in the face, is that really worth it? Patrick T. Jones, a lawyer for Snellgrove's family, said it's premature to discuss litigation, given that her death is still a subject of internal investigation that many details have not been made public, so we don't know what's going on there. Jones said that he still needs basic information, such as which officers fired the pellet that hit Snellgrove. Good luck tracing that, as described by a bystander. So your eyewitness I guess the eyewitness saw the specific cop who shot him, even though he was wearing all riot armor, blah, blah, blah. I think we're probably getting ahead of ourselves talking about who's going to get sued, he said. Jeffrey A. Dooner, lawyer for Kapila Banahapati, a Boston University student who was also said he was seriously injured by a pellet to the head, said he's considering a product liability suit against FN Herstal. The defendants in this case are not just in Boston. There has to be some looking into the manufacturers of these so-called non-lethal weapons. Well, first of all, Evan Herstal said it was a less lethal, not non-lethal. You know, if we're going to get into the semantics game. And I don't really know if I buy into this. Okay, now let's bear in mind what's going on. Let's just take a big fucking step back. Some sports team, okay, some, you know, excuse for gladiators there. We got a sports team. And they, you know, ran around a whole bunch of times with a ball. And because they ran around more times than the other guys did, they won. And so now they've won. And all the fans of the sports team have decided to freak the fuck out because their guys ran around with the ball. And therefore, you know, they're alpha males and females and everybody's winners now. And so, the thing where you don't just stand up and cheer. You don't just stand up and cheer. You don't just stand up and clap. You know, of course, you have to go outside and begin destroying your city because you won. And as everyone knows, if you win, you get to destroy your city, I guess. Now, the police, those horrible fucking cops, you know, having to fulfill that stupid oath they took to serve and protect, have to show up and stop these, you know, crazy motherfuckers from destroying their city. So they have a few ways of doing this. First of all, if they get in there, the cops, although, you know, they look kind of scary, they are just people. So the cops who are, incidentally, dealing with massive numbers, because it's a riot, and there's maybe, what, like one cop for every 10 people? So they have to control this crowd who wants to destroy the city, right? Doing, you know, damage and breaking windows and just generally fucking things up. So how do they do that? Well, they could get out the water cannons, but I don't think they got a water cannon. And besides, you know, water cannons actually do a lot of damage and so on and so forth. So I guess somebody made the decision to, instead of, you know, having the cops wade into the crowd with, you know, batons and sticks as they used to do, they made an educated and informed decision to use capsium paint pellets rather than just fog the whole crowd with capsium spray, because there's only certain people causing problems, so, you know, they're going to fire into the crowd to, you know, disperse this bunch. And, of course, the guns are shooting, and people get scared when they see guns shooting, so maybe there's a little bit more psychological impact there. So they do that. They fire into the crowd, and, you know, a few protesters get up in their face, and they're, you know, not, they're going against the cops, so a few cops slap these guys down, maybe hit a couple guys. They don't hold them down on the ground and kill them. They don't hold them down and kick them repeatedly in the head. They slap a few guys, and they smack a couple people with some, you know, rubber bullets and stuff. Now, somehow, this girl died in the process. Now, we don't know how that happened exactly, but I would say the cops had a responsibility there to exercise due care. And it seems to me that they exercised due care. So, if you're gonna, you know, cut the nuts off of law enforcement every time they try to do their job, what the fuck is their incentive, actually, to do their job? And I hope these cops don't get hung out to dry. And unless this gets exposed where, you know, some cops shoved a gun in her mouth and hammered 6 rounds down her throat, killing her, you know, this whole thing about suing people over them being at a riot, and people say, oh, we were caught up in the riot. Fuck you. You can get out of a riot. All you have to do is kind of like find a corner, hunker down, and go fetal, you know, go turtle, and no one will touch you. You know what I mean? It's quite apparent for people who are participating or not participating in a riot. You know what I'm saying? A riot is a very dangerous thing. I don't understand why people are so fucking intense on this. It makes me nuts. Now, and as well, you'll notice that nobody's talking about the evils of sports teams. How many times have you seen guys who want to, you know, capture the flag go outside and begin shooting up their neighborhood? Doesn't happen. You know? What about the video game Olympics? When that comes down the pipe and everybody wins, does the winning team go outside and wreck their city? No. I think we should ban sports. If they ban video games, we ought to ban fucking sports. Because I can show you more incidences of mob, total warfare, and violence from sports than I can from video games. Granted, video games may cause some problems. You know, Dave Grossman might have a point. Might have a point. But if we're going to ban video games, we should fucking ban all the jocks altogether. Because sports, if you want to talk about something that promotes violence, holy shit. sports promote violence, especially contact sports. Anyway, in Sharia news, now this is from Thunderspot. Now, the other day, I reported on how, you know, Canada happened to shoot down Sharia law because they were going to start using some of this Sharia law in Canada. This was, you know, and everybody all over the world took a giant cosmic shit about it. There was protests everywhere. Everyone's freaking out about this Sharia law. So I don't know much about Sharia law, you know. So it just so happens that I came across a news story sent in from Thunderspud showing me, you know, what exactly Sharia law is all about. So this is how this works. Now, this apparently, according to everyone involved here on the Sharia, you know, mud hut Muslim kind of side there, this is all fucking, you know, straight up. This is good stuff. This is their law system. All right. Now, in a desolate mountain region north of Kandahar, 8 American soldiers travel to a village of Bargwargana, I'm guessing, to convey condolences. So 8 American soldiers are going to a village to apologize. 3 days earlier, 2 Afghan brothers had been killed in a collision between a U.S. Army truck and their motorcycle. So it was a car accident. Guys on motorcycle hit an Army truck. Okay? I would say that probably in Afghanistan, the motorcycle would appear to be more maneuverable than a military truck. So I'd be wondering what was going on there and how that accident actually happened. But we won't get into that. The soldiers, we'll even say that, you know, maybe the soldiers, you know, they're out there working. They don't know the region. Didn't see the bike. Very possible. We'll even say they're at fault. The soldiers, dressed in body armor, arrived in armored Humvees laden with 50 caliber machine guns and automatic grenade launchers. That's the way it is when you're trying to be respectful in an area where some people are trying to kill you. Where, as a matter of fact, all the people are trying to kill you, and the entire Afghani culture is hardcore xenophobic. But anyway, and a road the Americans are building will cut the trip from Kandahar to Tarin Kot from 8 hours to 3, offering a promise of increased security and commerce for the people in the region. But in the dust of the evening winds, a speeding motorcycle and a construction truck converged. The road also brought the death of 2 young brothers. So the road, you know, went down, blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of a bad scene. Dust, yada, yada, smack. It was, according to both U.S. officials and local villagers, a tragic accident, which it is. It's horrible. It happened in the wake of the accident, however, underscores the soldiers' larger mission in Afghanistan and the difficulty of leaving a light footprint when driving heavy vehicles and carrying big guns on someone else's country. Now, that's very given. No one likes guys walking around with heavy firepower in your country. The U.S. Army maintains a special fund for condolence payments after accidental deaths. I didn't know that. And even when, as in this case, the military is not at fault, generally, in consultation with the government in Kabul, the commanding officer of the task force or battalion then decides what would be a reasonable gesture of sorrow. Afghan culture also provides guidelines for such accidents, allowing the survivors to choose between either Muslim Sharia law or Pashtun tradition. Okay? So this is right there, the Muslim Sharia law. This is what they want to do. So they want to, you know, have a choice. On Monday evening, in a small mud home, I didn't make that up, that's actually what it says in the article here, in a small mud home lined with pink and purple pillows, the Americans and the dead boy's family members sat down to try to agree on just compensation. Haji Abu Wahid, the bereaved father, along with the boy's grandfather and 3 uncles, joined 3 American soldiers for the meeting. General Shir Aga, local warlord and former Taliban supporter, who now provides U.S. military in this area with additional security, served as a mediator. This is pretty common. Because, you know, you think the guys who used to support the Taliban ought to be dragged out and shot. Well, that just doesn't really work. You know, you got to get everybody on the same side so that we can get some kind of, you know, stability in the region. Captain Elliot Bird, okay, buddies from the 8164th Engineer Combat Battalion out of Fort Lewis, Washington, spoke first and expressed his sincere regrets for the deaths. He spoke for his battalion, for his country, in a very honest way for himself, it seemed. This is not a replacement, Bird said, holding two envelopes of cash. No amount of money can make up for your loss, as I well know. The Americans have been advised on a gesture somewhere between $0 and $2,000 per death. They had brought $500. So $500 U.S. per head. Pashtun code has it that parties do not speak directly to each other, but instead through representatives. This prevents people from screaming at each other. So in response to the American gesture, Dr. Mohammed Nasir, a medical doctor trained in Kabul, who worked as Aga's translator, explained the family's expectations. You have 2 options, the doctor says. One is by the Quran, by Sharia. in that option, you give the driver of the truck to the father, and he can deal with them. So you know what's going to happen to the driver of the truck. One did not need to look at the Americans in the room to know what this was not an option. The second option, he continued, is our local tradition. You can either give 90 camels or two women. So for two boys, 180 camels or four women or the driver. Okay. This is, you know, what the Pashtun and Sharia, the Sharia says, we'll get the driver and we'll kill him because that's what they're going to do with him. Not wanting to seem unreasonable, Nassar added the price of one woman was $8,000. So a payment of $32,000 would also suffice. Can you believe this shit? Byrd tried again. Distress was a gesture, not reparations of payment, simply to help the father through a difficult time. Now, it seems to me that the Americans here are clearly, trying to do the right thing. Captain James Esquivel, a civil affairs officer for San Antonio, attached to the 864th, echoed their sentiment and asked if the father might speak for himself. Dressed in an elegant charcoal turban, with his own grandfather hunched down behind him, the man broke down almost immediately. You have the power. You have tanks and airplanes. I only have my two sons, he said, sobbing. My wife is too old. Now I have nothing. I have to wait for Allah, he says. Then he added, you can help me in the way of the Quran. I see. Now, this dude here, aside from the fact that he clearly looks at women as chattel, and slavery is really cool with this culture, I'm guessing, because apparently women are chattel, you know, because women are worth, apparently four chicks, a chick is worth, let's see, 480, so 90 camels. So we're talking about, you got about 35 to 36 camels per woman. You know, that's where it's going with this culture here. He wanted nothing of the money. He had seen loss. Now he wants the possession of the American driver to see it personally that the loss was shared. So this is a blood for blood thing. Oh, the warlord intervened, as did the uncle, in an attempt to repair the situation. They did not succeed. The uncle reiterated the options. The American reiterated their regrets. Small glasses of tea lay half finished as the meeting broke up. Now, you have to look at this and go, okay, now, since the Americans are in there, okay, let's get really, you know, people go, wow, you know, the Americans shouldn't be there in the first place. Okay, first of all, the Americans have no reason whatsoever to meet with this guy. And $500 per head goes a long way in Afghanistan, let me tell you. So I'm looking at this story here where the guy's father's saying, no, I want to kill the driver, or you can give me $32,000. And I'm like, holy fuck, guy. Don't you realize that you don't have a leg to stand on here? The Americans show up, okay, they show up. They didn't have to. They didn't have to show up. They could just say, fuck you, we're sorry. Okay, too bad. You know, accident. Maybe your son should be humming along on a dirt road on a motorcycle when there's trucks working. You know, maybe. I don't know. They could have said that, but no. They actually sent out a crew, and then this guy comes out and spits this shit at him where he says he wants to kill another American. Yeah, that'll solve a lot. God damn, I'm loving that Sharia law. That's good stuff. And the reason why we're trying to embrace this culture is why? You can get me at newsreel@rantradio.com. I'd like to know why, you know, we should really embrace and follow this culture that views women as worth 35 camels. Sorry. Nothing down on the camels. I'm sure there's some nice camels out there. But, yeah, I just, I can't fucking believe that story. That just blows my mind. The sheer ignorance of that. Like, it's like these guys are from another planet. Now, in toxic alert news, this is an interesting toxic alert. Researchers fear the growing popularity of portable music players and other items that attach directly to the ears, including cell phones, is contributing to hearing loss in younger people. Now, I remember back in the day, for those of us who are in our 30s, we can remember back when there was all sorts of devices that would come out that would be attached to your head or whatever, head-mounted displays and stuff. There'd be lots of warnings on them saying, don't wear it for longer than 2 hours, yada, yada, yada. But now that's gotten played down and played down and played down. It's a different level of use than we've seen in the past, says Robert Novak, Director of Clinical Education and Audiology at Purdue University. It's becoming more of a full-day listening experience as opposed to just when you're jogging. Increasingly, Novak says, he's seeing too many young people with older ears on younger bodies, a trend that has been building since the portable Walkman made its debut a few decades back. Everywhere she turns, Angela Day sees people carrying portable music devices, often with earbuds firmly in place. They're very widespread, she says Day, a senior at DePaul University who regularly listens to music on her own iPod while studying or working out. So, addicting. To document the trend, Novak and colleagues have been randomly examining students and found a disturbing and growing incidence of what is known as noise-induced hearing loss. Usually, it means they've lost the ability to hear higher frequencies, evidence at times of by mild ear ringing or trouble following conversations in noisy situations. Hearing specialists say they're also seeing more people in their 30s and 40s. Many of them among the first Walkman users who suffer from more pronounced tinnitus, an internal ringing, or even the sound of whooshing and buzzing in their ears. Now, obviously, you know, it seems kind of a no-brainer. If you're going to listen to headphones 24/7, eventually your hearing's going to get hurt by this. But you got to bear in mind, too, that didn't I just cover a few newsreel episodes ago how hearing aids are being marketed as the next big bling? The new must-have gadget are hearing aids. Now, isn't that interesting? So what we're doing here is we're manufacturing our own market. Does it work better for the core political to make speaker systems and stuff like that for headphones that are protective? Or does it work better for you to make the answer, to make the cure and the disease? That way you get them coming and going. Now, you're going to be seeing this more and more. So I would advise you right now, please make sure that you do not, don't wear headphones. I very rarely wear headphones, and I'd like to advise as many people as I can to just kind of, you know, listen to them as minimally as you can. Keep it on low volume. And if you're using headphones to drown out other noise, you're not actually drowning out the noise. What you're doing is you're just cranking up you're doing more damage. Now, there's a lot of people in car stereos with the bass and all that kind of stuff. But I think the damage starts happening when you're doing it for, like, you know, you got your iPod in for like 3 hours a day or headphones on for 3 or 4 hours a day. You know, don't get me wrong. I go for a run in the mornings and I throw the headphones on. Nothing wrong with it. But, I mean, all things in moderation, let's not fuck up our hearing. Because no matter what the cool gadgets are, nothing beats meat. Okay? Now, in UK ID card news. Now, this is interesting stuff. This was kind of a weird little story that almost got missed. I found this one. The Home Office has outlined plans for controlling access to ID card information. Now, this is a big ID card they're going to put in the UK here. In a bid to allay fears over misuse and to manage the possible load on the database system. Because obviously, you know, if you got these ID cards, which are nothing more than, you know, a massive card catalog of everybody's information. According to the government department, business and public sector, organizations are being given graded access depending on need. Now, what they're doing here is they're going to set it up so there's a grade. So if you have a company, you have a certain level of access, sort of like secret, top secret, all that kind of stuff. Citizens will be able to ask for a record when their identity has to be checked and by whom. But no details were given on how simple such a procedure might be or at what cost. There's the magic word, cost. They're manufacturing, they're going to make a database, and then they're going to sell access to it for premium members. And, of course, there'll be reselling of access. And, you know, you can go through a middleman who's got really good access, and he charges out, and there'll be underhanded, you know, backroom deals to make sure people get access. You know, so everybody's on a database. Catherine Courtney, ID card program director at the Home Office, told the Financial Times, there will be a verification scheme that requires the users to justify the level of verification they want to use. She added that there will be plans to link the card into next-generation credit and debit card readers to provide a lower level of identity confirmation. So, the ID cards, your identification card, is being linked to your credit and debit cards. Interesting. This could be used... just the readers, eh? Oh, okay, so it's not actually being linked to your card. It's being linked to the card reader. I see. This could be used by car hire firms, for example, to check your identity. Yeah, they could. And if you make it RFID, actually, they could just charge you as you drive around the city. As a matter of fact, if you, you know, were to go out one night and have a fight with your spouse or whatever, and you drive around the city, you could come back and you'd be $20 down without doing anything. Just because you went over the certain little RFID tags and they'll credit your account. Hell, the cops wouldn't even have to stop you for speeding anymore. They could just nail your car, look it up, credit your account. If you got the money there and the cash goes down, you get a little sticker in the mail later, an email saying, hey, you were speeding on this road. We got photos. We charged you $500. Yeah, we did. It was a school zone. It was raining, but it was a school zone. So now you're out $500. You like that? Have some of that. Oh, yeah, you can try to get your money back. It'll take you 6 to 8 months, but it only took us, 13 seconds to access your account and draw the money out. Farming the people. Ian Watmore, a government's chief information officer, conceded that a system on such a scale had not been demonstrated anywhere in the world. But I bet he's jerking off to that idea. And in some areas, we'll be pushing the boundaries. Pushing the what boundaries? What boundaries? There's no boundaries. The only boundaries that exist, people are like, well, a lot of the civil rights groups are going to get really upset. Yeah, okay, what's the leverage? Where's the leverage? What's the leverage that these civil rights groups have? You got to think about that. We don't like that. So, we're going to protest. Noted. Please go to the fenced areas and scream your head off and wave as many signs around as you want. What are you going to do? Oh, are you going to do anything violent? Well, that makes you a terrorist extremist. And that way we'll shoot you. Kind of limiting the options there, aren't they? Kind of cutting it down to what you can and cannot do. They're talking about, we're pushing the boundaries. We're pushing the boundaries. What boundaries? There are no fucking boundaries. There's no boundaries. There's no legal standing. There's no protection of privacy. I mean, this is all just how much we're willing to put up with before somebody gets shot. That's what they're talking about here. And nobody wants to come out and say that, but that's what's on everybody's mind. Eventually, it's going to come to the point where somebody goes, no, fuck you. We're going to start shooting. And I'd like to avoid that. For the record, I'm not encouraging that action by any sort of strength or measure, but, unless there's something I'm missing here, I can't see any kind of boundary enforcement. You can tie them up with legal, but, again, we get into a money war there, and it's pretty easy to see who's going to win that. Now, in VR news, virtual reality news, this is kind of an interesting sort of concept. I've never heard of this. The Digital Media Collaboratory and the Department of Computer Sciences at the University of Texas at Austin are pleased to announce the Neuro Evolving Robotic Operatives, or Neuro, video game on Thursday, June 23rd, at neurogame.org. Neuro integrates cutting-edge artificial intelligence and machine learning research into a commercial-grade video game to produce an entirely novel gaming experience, so they say. The result is almost 2 years' worth of work by a mostly volunteer team and over 30 student programmers, artists, and researchers at the university. This is kind of a cool concept. The Neuro, a player trains a team of novice soldiers in the skills needed for battle. Once it's like sim drill instructor. Once the soldiers have acquired the skills, the players can take the teams into battle mode where their tactics are tested against other teams trained by other players. The real-time neuro evolution of augmentation topologies, RTNeat technology inside Neuro, allows robotic soldiers to really learn from the player in real time as the game is being played, making this new game genre possible. Now, I wonder how much of a stretch it is to take this sort of, this Neuro sort of concept and apply it to things like robots or machines in the real world, and that just opens the door for all sorts of science fiction stuff. Neuro is available for download at neurogame.org. The website also includes forums in which to discuss their training techniques, ask for help, as well as a link to media and research papers on NEAT and RTNeat. Please direct game-related questions to the forums. So it's looks pretty cool, and I'd like to get some feedback from some hardcore game heads, see what they think about this. Is this just a scam, or is this, something that may in fact be worthwhile? Now, I've been reporting on mercenary news over in Iraq for quite some time, the PMCs. And right now, the way it's, up until now, the way it's been working is any swinging dick can show up over there with a firearm, and it's basically the Wild West. You can show up, you got bouncers over there with rifles, everybody's running around. There's no real law or oversight committee or anything like that going along. Okay? Well, it seems that that is all going to come to a screeching halt pretty soon. Thousands of heavily armed private security contractors could be expelled from Iraq in a government crackdown. For more than 2 years, such contractors have roamed with impunity. But now the Interior Ministry has imposed rules how Interior Ministry has imposed rules requiring all of their firms to be registered and weapons to be carried only by guards holding an official license. This will be interesting. I'd like to see them enforce this. If any of the companies is considered to be a threat or if it angers government officials, its official permit could be revoked and the business ordered to depart. About 25,000 security contractors, many of them British, American, South African ex-servicemen, lured to Iraq by wages up to £750 a day, are estimated to be in the country providing protection for official buildings, supply convoys, or visiting businessmen. They are highly unpopular with the locals because they're just hired guns running around. Convoys of contractors have become a common sight, the journey through Baghdad since March 2003, U.S.-led invasion. Adorned with sunglasses and bulletproof vests, they travel in white four-wheel drive vehicles with gun barrels protruding from the windows. Well, incidentally, they're not always white, but whatever. Many refuse to obey road signs and consider traffic jams a security risk, so barge through lines of vehicles and are often forced to pull over rapidly onto pavements. I see, so they just, you know, drive through because, again, it's a security risk, which, in fact, it is. Their lack of official status has long been a concern for those operating on U.S. Department of Defense contracts are free from risk of legal penalty under the Iraqi judicial system if they killed anyone in a firefight. So the defense contractors, if they geek anybody or they just spray out the window and kill a bunch of people, there's no following that up. There's no possible, you know, way to say, oh, well, you know, they committed murder or whatever. There's no rules there. It's the Wild West. But under the new rules confirmed yesterday, all such firms will be brought under the authority of the Baghdad government. All companies will have to provide details of their numbers of employees, jobs undertaken, and office addresses. Which, at first, sounds like it'll be okay, but I think a lot of these PMCs will just simply go, oh, yeah, you betcha. They'll feed them a bunch of addresses, and then they'll just, you know, they'll do a quick email change, and that'll be it. Bang, you know, the company will disevolve, and there'll be no way to really prove any of this. But it's an interesting thought. I'd like to see how that story develops in Iraq. Now, in thought crime news, before skeptical world leaders, your hero and mine, President Bush, on Wednesday, urged compassion for the needy and the pressed in the global community. Okay, so he wants compassion for the needy and pressed to crack down on terrorists plotting deadly attacks. Wow, he's never said that before. Addressing more than 160 presidents, prime ministers, and kings gathered for 3 days of U.N. General Assembly meetings, Bush sought to sell his blueprints for spreading democracy in Iraq and elsewhere, overhauling the United Nations, and expanding trade. Oh, yeah. As we fight, the terrorists must know that the world stands united against them. What terrorists? Bush said those gathered before him, including many who harbor lingering bitterness towards the U.S.-led war in Iraq, sat silently through the 25-minute speech reflecting tradition. Bush pressed for Secretary Council approval, which quickly followed, of a resolution calling upon all nations to adopt laws prohibiting the incitement of terrorist acts. That's why it's thought crime news. Incitement of terrorist acts. Now, a terrorist act is pretty fucking vague. Inciting a terrorist act is also vague. This show could probably be called Inciting a Terrorist Act. The measure has been circulated by Britain in the wake of summer's bus and subway bombings in London. London has been bombed more than any city probably in the first world. I don't know why they're suddenly doing it now. Later, sitting at the Security Council's horseshoe-shaped table, Bush applauded its option. We have a solemn obligation to stop terrorism at its early stages, he said. Sure, if you could give me a definition of what terrorism is, buddy, we'd be all over that, but he's speaking in vagaries. Before the General Assembly, the president also asked nations to follow his lead and sign a Russian-sponsored treaty that would require the prosecution and extradition of anyone seeking radioactive materials or nuclear devices. Again, sounds like a good idea at first, but when you start, you know, I mean, that's cutting down technology pretty big. That one's a little bit more, you know, I could see that one over, say, inciting terrorist acts. We must send a clearer message to the rulers of outlaw regimes, sort of like America used to be an outlaw regime, that sponsor terror and pursue weapons of mass murder, you will not be allowed to threaten the peace and stability of the world. Unless you're George Bush, in which case you can threaten all the peace and stability to your Turkish delight. Now, Bush, you know, is quite clearly just trying to expand the United States. That's what he's doing. He's trying to take over the world. Is it, you know, is that bad? I mean, from an American perspective, would you not want your leader to try to conquer the earth? You know, if I'm pretty sure that although Americans freak out about a one world government a lot, you get a lot of people screaming about one world government. If it was an American one world government, they'd be all for it. You see what I mean? So I can't really support Bush because there's a lot of war going on. There's a lot of people dying, you know, and I think that there's probably a better way to do this. Even if you were to do it tactically, even if you were to do it more covert and try to take over the world, you could do it with a lot less people dying. You know what I mean? Like, you'd play assassination games or something, but don't go doing this massive, you know, there's too many people dying. Now, in lab rat news, now this is a seriously lab rat story, and you can expect this to be showing up over here in the United States. The Dutch government, first guys to do it, those crazy Dutch, you know, always very concerned about, you know, fair play and stuff. The Dutch government plans to open an electronic file, so they're, you know, they're numbering every child at birth as a tool to spot and protect the troubled kids of the future. It's for their own good, don't you know? Beginning January 1, 2007, all citizens will be tracked from cradle to the grave in a single database, including health, education, family, and police records. Financial, the matrix. Start to finish. The health ministry said on Tuesday, as a privacy safeguard, no single person or agency will be able to access all contents of a file. But organizations can raise red flags in the dossier or caution other agencies about problems, ministry spokesman Jan Bauer said. That is the weakest fucking method of privacy control I've ever heard of. The intention is to protect troubled children. Of course it is. Think of the children. We have to lab rat everyone to protect the children. Until now, schools and police have been unable to communicate with each other about truancy records and criminality, which are often links. If you don't go to school, you're obviously a criminal. Child Protection Services will say, hey, there's a warning flag from the police, and there's another one from the school. There's another one from the doctor. Oh, Bauer said, something must be going on, and it's time to call the parents for a meeting. Isn't that interesting? So they don't actually get to see what it is. Yeah, they do. They just made it sort of like it's got indicators as well. You know, every child will get a citizen service number, making it easier to keep track of the children with problems even when their families move, the Secretary of Health, Clements Ross. Now, you know, this is very much number of the beast kind of stuff going on here. Safety, guidance, education, and supervision are incredibly important for the development of children, Ross said. All Dutch births are currently registered with local authorities. Wow. So if you have like a godchild where, you know, you're born outside of the matrix and you're not in the box or whatever, you might want to watch that because, you know, you won't get your number and everything. And then you may not actually be a person. And you might get accused of being a clone. Oh, man, we got some crazy times coming down the pipe. Now, those good people over in China are always very industrious. You know, they're not so big on the human rights, but they are creative. As this next story in Recycled People News, sent to me by Madar, has pointed out, a Chinese cosmetics company, the Cosmetics Company, is using skin harvested from the corpses of executed convicts to develop beauty products for sale in Europe. An investigation by The Guardian has discovered. Let me just get through this story. Agents for the firm have told would-be customers it's developing collagen for lip and wrinkle treatments from skin taken from prisoners after they've been shot. The agents say some of the company's products have been exported to the UK and that the use of skin from condemned convicts is traditional and nothing to make a big fuss about. It's kind of like, you know, making lampshades out of people's skin and stuff. With European regulations to control cosmetic treatments such as collagen not expected for several years, doctors and politicians say the discovery highlights the dangers faced by increasing numbers of people seeking to improve their looks. Apart from ethical concerns, there's also the potential risk of infection. Never mind the fact that we're making products out of people. Never mind that. They could be infectious. The House of Commons Select Health Committee is to examine the regulatory system and may launch an investigation to question ministers about their need for immediate new controls. I'm sure the committee will want to look at this, said Kevin Byrne, as its Labour chairman. There is something in every society we will be very concerned about, especially making makeup out of convicts. Plastic surgeons are also concerned about the delay in introducing regulations to control the cosmetics and treatments industry. It is unclear whether any of the aesthetic fillers such as collagen will be available in the UK or on the internet or supplied by the company, which cannot be identified for legal reasons. For legal reasons, you can't identify which Chinese company is making makeup out of people. It is also whether unclear whether collagen is made from the prisoner's skin or is in the research stages or is in production. So they don't know, but this cosmetic company is buying corpses, or they're making makeup out of people. Okay? Now, I would also draw, this is not the first time this happened. The Nazis used to stuff pillows with Jews' hair. They used to make cutlery out of their bones, leather wallets, shit like that. However, The Guardian has learned that the company has exported collagen and products to the UK in the past. An agent told customers that it also exported to the US and European countries that it will be trying to develop fillers using tissue from aborted fetuses. I surprisingly don't have much problem using tissues from aborted fetuses, but I would rather use that tissue to do spinal research like they're doing in France versus makeup. When formally approached by The Guardian, an agent denied that the company was using skin harvested from executed prisoners. However, he had already admitted that it was doing precisely this during a number of conversations with the researchers posing as a Hong Kong businessman. There is a lot of research still being carried out in the traditional manner using skin from executed prisoners and aborted fetuses, the agent told the researcher. This material, he said, was being bought from biotech companies based in the Heilongjiang province and was being developed elsewhere in China. He suggested that the use of skin and other tissues harvested from executed prisoners was not uncommon. Yeah, the Chinese are pretty industrious people. That's some interesting shit going on over there. Speaking of interesting shit and mad scientists, a bunch of eerie radiated red rodents may be harbingers of a technology that could speed cancer research and even allow scientists to cure sickness by directly editing the DNA code of people with genetic illness. Editing DNA. To do it, scientists are inserting genes from fish and insects into people. The mice were created by Tian Zhu, a Howard Hughes medical investigator at Yale, and his colleagues at the Fudan University in Shanghai. Guess what? China. To make the mice glow red, they inserted a gene taken from coral and inserted it into the mouse genome. Scientists have done such experiments 1,000 times with a box of Crayola, with Crayola box of colors using glowing genes taken from jellyfish and fireflies. Glowing mice are old hat. The special thing was that the batch was created. Zhu says his new technique is cheaper and cheaper scientific labor in China. Okay, let me just cover that sentence again because I kind of screwed it up. Zhu said his new technique and cheaper scientific labor in China could cut the price of creating new gene modification in a mouse from $100,000, some pharmaceutical firms pay, to a mere $500. Aha! So, it seems that I don't think we're going to see any sort of regulation of what's going on in China, because they're the ones doing this really cool, research for life extension and stuff like that with any of these pesky laws to get in their way. And if they're using convicts to do experiments on for makeup, how much do you want to bet those same convicts are getting used for experiments in other ways? And keeping with that, the Germans want to chime in here. In waste gas news, a German inventor said he has found a way to make cheap diesel fuel out of dead cats. Now, let me just get through this first. Dr. Christian Koch, 55, from, my God, Clean Hartmannsdorf, said his method uses old tires, weeds, and animal cadavers. They are heated up to 300 degrees Celsius to filter out the hydrocarbon, which is then turned into diesel by a catalytic converter. He said the resulting high-quality biodiesel costs just 15 pence per liter. Koch says the cadaver of a fully grown cat can produce 2.5 liters of fuel, meaning that around 20 cats are needed for a full tank. He said, I tank my car with my own diesel mixture and have driven for 105,000 miles without any problems. Annalise Krauss of the Dresden Animal Protection Association blasted Koch's new diesel, though, saying, this is as bad as experimenting on animals. Now, scientifically, you've got to bear in mind that they do a lot of shit with cats. And do you know why they do a lot of shit with cats? They do shit with cats because they're complex organisms. So if he can make diesel out of cats, you can make diesel out of people. And then if you take 2.5 liters, that's like just a little bit more than a 2-liter thing of milk, you know, compare that to the weight and mass of a cat, well, you can see that most of the cat wound up in the gas tank. And, you know, I wonder how long before China sees how many convicts it takes to fill a gas tank. Because, again, pretty complex creature, a cat. So if you can do it with a cat, who's to say you can't do it with people? Your daily hack today is something so you can know how much you're going to get sued for. It's the piracy calculator. What's your illegal hoard worth? How much would the RIMPAA demand minimum if they sued you? Find out. Check this list. And, Sim, prepare to get your socks knocked off. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 66 people for the month of August. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance for gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Front 242 called Tyranny for You. I'm going to leave you now with a track by Scraping Fetus Off the Wall called Anything. Props to, the guy who sent it in, who's really going to be mad that I think it's Trebu sent me that. So props to you. And until tomorrow, that's what servers said. End of line.
It takes one to come. Some things are better left unsaid. Like a pound of protection beats an ounce of lead. Foam. There must be some kind of romance to be undone. Find a belt full of bullets. Fill your head full of bread. Float like a butterfly. Sting like a mandarin. It takes two to tangle and one to a one. If you don't suit you, you're better off dead. Cause a pound of protection beats an ounce of lead. Be-ba-bo-bum. There must be some kind of romance being done. Cause the blind be 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 the blind. An angry man for himself. Mind a flame with disregard for the sanctity of other people's lives. By the filthy few in positions of power who go for the jugular in order to survive. Disinfect those dangerous rabid dogs. Make sure the kids stay in. Cause if you wanna be immortal, you gotta have something to trade in. Tobacco jumping soldier of misfortune at battle they call life with the warm soft breeze of Santa Ana whispering real dry bones. I'm a cockroach in your tinsel town. Cry you mercy, I am the Lord. When the time runs out, when the money runs out, I can do any goddamn thing I want. Get out of my sight. Get out.